I'm Abigail Galvan. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
There are numerous states that have tried to defund Planned Parenthood in the past.
The Supreme Court will decide whether states with pro-life laws can pull Medicaid funding away from abortion facilities. How this case could have national implications on how your money is spent.
There is no reason that this for-profit, insanely expensive, or insanely wealthy organization that makes money off of killing at the unborn should receive taxpayer funding for abortion.
The Trump administration will strip Planned Parenthood of millions of dollars. Could this be a step forward in defunding it entirely?
You know, John Paul teaches us through the theology of the body that our bodies are not meaningless. Our bodies are meaningful.
Plus, the legacy of Pope St. John Paul II's theology of the body on the 20th anniversary of his passing. We look at his teachings on marriage, family, and the dignity of life.
And Wisconsin stood up and said loudly that justice does not have a price. Our courts are not for sale.
The results are in. Democratic-backed Susan Crawford has won the empty seat on Wisconsin Supreme Court, cementing the court's slim liberal majority. An outspoken supporter of abortion rights, Crawford has previously represented Planned Parenthood on numerous occasions as a private attorney. She defeated Republican-backed Brad Schimmel, a longtime advocate for life. The race in Wisconsin has garnered national attention as the first major vote since the November election. Major donors from Elon Musk to George Soros have funneled more than $100 million into the state race, making it the most expensive judicial election in U.S. history. With liberal justices maintaining their majority in the court, they can continue to push a pro-abortion agenda in Wisconsin.
If the Supreme Court rules in South Carolina's favor, then that roadblock will be taken away. And I'm confident that a number of states looking at Planned Parenthood will decide this is not an organization that they want to fund with their taxpayer dollars.
Taxpayer dollars funding abortion clinics is at the center of a Supreme Court case that could have national implications on how your money is spent. South Carolina had banned taxpayer funding under its Medicaid program from going to Planned Parenthood. However, a woman and the abortion empire sued the state, and the case moved its way through the courts until it reached the U.S. Supreme Court. Justices will decide whether pro-life states can pull Medicaid funding away from abortion facilities. The March for Life led a rally at the Supreme Court today, while the justices heard oral arguments on the case of South Carolina. Hundreds of pro-lifers showed support for a state's right to choose health, not harm, for pregnant women and their children. Jenny Bradley Lichter, the president of the March for Life, who has wide-ranging legal and policy experience, joins us now to discuss this important case. She was inside the Supreme Court while oral arguments took place. Jenny, it's such a pleasure to have you here with us today. Can you explain for our viewers, what is the question at the center of this case?
Sure. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be at EWTN. So this case is a little bit wonky and technical, but I'm going to simplify it the best that I can. The bottom line of this case is, does an individual state, in this case South Carolina, have the authority under the Medicaid statute to decide that it doesn't want Medicaid dollars, taxpayer dollars, flowing to Planned Parenthood? South Carolina made the decision several years ago based on its state's strong pro-life commitment and pro-life laws that it deemed Planned Parenthood disqualified to participate in the Medicaid program. And this case is essentially asking, can the state's decision stand?
That's a great summary. Thank you so much. And I hear you were in the room this morning during the oral arguments. What was the atmosphere like? And was there anything that stood out to you?
Thanks. It was very exciting to be in the courtroom this morning. The room was packed. And when you're at an argument in the Supreme Court, you really can hear a pin drop while the lawyers are making their argument and then they're engaging with the justices as they ask questions. So this morning, the argument went on for a long time, an hour and a half or maybe even a little bit longer. The justices asked really good questions. South Carolina's lawyer, John Bursch from ADF, did a terrific job answering all of their questions.
We had him on earlier.
Did you? Fantastic. Yes, he did. I don't think this is going to ultimately be a unanimous decision, but based on what I heard this morning, I do think that a majority of the justices on the Supreme Court will uphold South Carolina's ability to defund Planned Parenthood from their Medicaid program.
That's very encouraging. Mm-hmm. And more than a dozen states have pro-life laws that limit abortion. How can this case impact their Medicaid spending?
That's right. So the states all have Medicaid dollars from the federal government to disperse. And again, remember, those are taxpayer dollars, right? It's our money that the federal government is giving the states. And then, you know, states can decide ultimately how that Medicaid money should be spent. So if South Carolina wins this case, that opens up a lot of opportunities for other states to make decisions like, based on the fact that Planned Parenthood's business model is built around abortion, essentially assembly line style abortion, and its long history of botched procedures and mistakes and subpar health care, that it doesn't believe that participants in Medicaid should be taking taxpayer dollars to Planned Parenthood. So a win for South Carolina in this case would have really wide impacts on how other states with pro-life laws and pro-life people could be spending their Medicaid dollars.
That's great. And then finally, we just covered the Wisconsin Supreme Court case election. Mm-hmm. What is your reaction to Susan Crawford winning? And how do you think this will impact the fight for life on the ground?
Well, I'm sorry, of course, to see Susan Crawford's victory. She built her campaign on abortion and on really scare tactics, right? Trying to scare voters into believing that if she didn't win, the clock would be turned back and women would lose all kinds of important rights. And of course, that's not true at all. So I think this is a call to action, especially for pro-life people in Wisconsin, but for all of us, right? To just continue to make it clear and witness to life that the pro-life movement isn't about scaring people or taking away health care, right? It's about taking care of women and their babies.
I love that. And then I think also part of the narrative saying that a lot of money is being put into this race.
Yeah.
But I think the argument can be a little bit one-sided. What are a couple of the arguments you've been making on the ground that you think have really helped people shift their perspective?
Yeah, you're exactly right. So a lot of money from big Democrat donors poured into this race, right, this state-level race, in a way that I think we haven't really seen before. But the pro-life message never should change, right? The message, again, is that the pro-life movement is about making sure that moms can access the support and resources that they want and need. And actually, just to turn back to the South Carolina case, right, one of the great outcomes of a win for South Carolina would be the state's ability to direct more Medicaid dollars towards life-affirming healthcare providers, including pregnancy resource centers. So in Wisconsin and everywhere across the country, it's really important to make sure that women know how to find places like PRCs and maternity homes when they need them. And just kind of keep spreading that message of support, love, care, compassion for moms and their babies. Again, we are on the side of life. We are on the side of love and care and compassion. We don't have to rely on scaring people using big-pocketed Democrat donors, right? But just need to keep making sure that message breaks through.
That's so true. The truth is loud and strong.
It is. Yeah.
Now, Jenny, last time we had you on the show, you were president-elect. Now Yes. You've had a couple of months in the presidency. What has surprised you most?
That's right. It's been just about 2 months since I became the president of the March for Life, which is already just an incredible blessing to me and my family. And I have to say, one of the best and maybe most surprising things so far has been how absolutely wonderful our state marches for life are. And I, you know, in a way, not surprising because everyone had told me that they were fantastic. But as I have been able to get on the road myself and attend state marches in Arizona earlier this month, in Connecticut, I'm going out to the Colorado March for Life next week. They're so much fun and the energy is incredible and the tone is so positive and so hopeful. It's really, really beautiful. A local community coming together at the state level to stand up for life. There's always a lot of school groups there. There's families with their kids in strollers. There's a lot of homemade signs. And again, just that really organic grassroots energy that I am finding so encouraging. And then I'm bringing that energy back with me to Washington and then kind of counting the days until I can get back on the road again to another state march. So I would just encourage anyone who's within driving distance of a state march for life, please come and join us this spring or next fall or whenever you have a chance, because they're really fantastic.
Well, Jenny, thank you so much for taking the time to be here. I know today was a busy day, and thank you for the work that you do.
Thanks for having me.
An update to a story we've been following. This week, the Trump administration is withholding $20 million from Planned Parenthood. The Department of Health and Human Services froze Title X funding for 9 state affiliates because it says they failed to comply with Trump's executive order on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Natalie Dodson, a policy analyst at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, says the administration's move is one that resonates with taxpayers.
Taxpayer funding for abortion has been unpopular, widely unpopular, for many, many years. President Trump made the commitment that he would return the issue of abortion to the states. That includes funding for abortion. And so defunding Planned Parenthood is the first step in really completing this commitment that he's made to the American people and to the taxpayers.
Planned Parenthood has 10 days to prove it complies with Trump's orders before the funding is further suspended or terminated. That sum is just part of the hundreds of millions of federal taxpayer money that the organization receives every year.
The pro-life movement stands unified behind one single message: defund the entire abortion industry. Defund the longtime standard bearer of Planned Parenthood once and for all.
Pro-lifers from across the country traveled to the Capitol last Thursday to encourage lawmakers to defund Planned Parenthood. They stood among more than 1,000 small pink crosses, a somber reminder of the preborn lives the organization takes every day. While the Trump administration only temporarily froze some of Planned Parenthood's funding, Congress could permanently defund it.
The committee has examined multiple sources of evidence about systemic failures across Canada in relation to poverty alleviation, access to health care, accessible housing. The disproportionate impact of these failures on women with disabilities and persons with disabilities in marginalised situations, which underpins the so-called choice for seeking MAID as an alternative.
Rosemary Kayes, vice chairperson of the United Nations Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, speaking out against Canada's assisted suicide and euthanasia program. Canada legalized medical assistance in dying, or MAID, in 2016. It was available to those whose death was reasonably foreseeable. Since then, lawmakers have pushed to provide MAID to those whose death is not reasonably foreseeable, such as people with disabilities, as well as those with mental illness and even minors who are at least 12 years old. After outcry, the expansion was postponed until 2027. The UN committee has expressed extreme concern about the expansions proposed for Canada's MAID program. They want the country to establish a federal oversight mechanism to monitor MAID in Canada and implement measures that ensure Canada's systemic failures of social health and well-being are addressed. Jasmine Lemieux-Lefebvre is a coordinator for Living with Dignity, a citizen network with no religious or political affiliation based in Quebec. He describes how a disabled person's dignity is disregarded when seeking health care in Canada.
We want people with disability to be considered as every single Canadian when they are seeing that they want to die. They should have suicide prevention, access, and good care. That's what disabled people in Canada wants.
If you would like to learn more about the work Living with Dignity is doing to speak out against MAID and what action you can take, visit their campaign website, aidinliving.org. It's estimated that thousands of pregnant migrants cross the U.S.-Mexico border every year, often facing harmful conditions to do so. Many migrants are pressured to abort, unaware of resources available to them at pro-life pregnancy centers on either side of the border. One nonprofit houses women in two shelters, one in Texas and one in Mexico, named Stellar Shelter and Casa Maris, with Our Lady of Guadalupe as their patron. They offer shelter and life-affirming resources for migrant mothers, enabling them to choose life while they are seeking asylum, whether it's diapers, food, or clothes for their children. The pro-life group Democrats for Life of America recently took a trip to volunteer at those pro-life pregnancy centers, and they shared their experience in a webinar.
These women are told along the way, oh, you can't keep your baby. There's no place to support a baby. You know, you can't. And so many women choose abortion along the way, even while they're trying to get to the border. A few weeks ago, there were 80 people there. And when we visited, there were zero. This is the big fall off of people's trust that they can even make it across the border. They don't know what to do. It's just a time of real uncertainty.
Joining me now to discuss the situation of migrant mothers at the border is Karina Breceda, the co-founder of two pregnancy centers, Stellar Shelter and Casa Maris. Thank you so much for joining us, Karina. First, can you tell me about what you're seeing day to day at your shelters, especially with the shifting situation at the border?
Yeah, but right now, because of the pushback and policy, we've had a really low, really low numbers. The flow of migration has really drastically reduced, pushing people underground. So that has caused us to, reevaluate what that means in reaching women, reaching vulnerable women for services.
Yeah, and can to explain to our viewers, could you show us some context of the kind of numbers you were getting before this happened?
Yes. So last year, we were seeing thousands of people. Personally, we took care of 532 people at our shelters, and this was just in the families that we would attend. This wouldn't include people that we would do outreach for. And right now, a lot of our outreach is in centers or in train stations or in community centers, kind of trying to build that the routes of migration that have collapsed at the moment.
And what kind of resources do you generally provide women at the border, and what challenges do you face in providing care to mothers?
We provide a safe place, a dignified housing. We provide, we have a lactation support and a community of mothers. We provide anything a woman might need through their stages of pregnancy.
And what would you want to tell mothers at the border who don't think life is an option for them?
The women that have come to us, usually we think that the fear of pregnancy would be resources or even the place to give birth. But the fears that mothers have shared with us is that they're afraid to do this alone. And to know that you have a community of women, you have a community on both sides of the border that will be there with you to walk you with you every step of the way. And that won't be an experience that you'll walk alone.
It's great that you can provide that for them. And how does your center receive funding? If our audience wanted to help, how can they do so?
You could go to our donation link, which is Border Life International. You can also go to our website at newwayfeminist.com. And you can also reach me on my Instagram, Karina Breceda, and reach out to me directly.
Great. And now you mentioned that you've had to kind of shift the work you're doing to do more outreach to the communities. Could you tell us a little bit about the mural project initiative you have planned?
So we thought about, okay, what does pro-life hospitality look like? What does pro-life through culture look like? Because it's a very important part of my community. We have a big mural culture here. And with Artisans of St. Joseph and based out of Boston, we designed these two murals representing Mother Cabrini of the U.S. and St. Toribio of Mexico to show the binationality of the church in humanitarian aid and in border issues. And we've taken this image to a lot of the points of migration and community centers to talk about our services, and because we're a big faith community, people connect with it. It is like a symbol of hope for them, and I'm really excited that we put it on the shelter as this to create this like welcoming environment for the people we serve.
That's great. Well, Karina, thank you so much for the work that you're doing on the border, and thank you for serving life wherever it's needed.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Last month marked 1 year since the first over-the-counter contraceptive pill to not require prescription became available in the U.S. The O-pill uses the hormone progestin to prevent pregnancy. While recent data about the drug is limited, Dr. Kathleen Raville, a board-certified OBGYN and former president of the Catholic Medical Association, tells us the O-pill can come with serious and even life-threatening side effects, including an ectopic pregnancy when the baby implants outside the uterus.
This isn't like taking Tylenol for a headache. These are serious hormones that unfortunately encourage a girl to be sexually active, thinking that she won't get pregnant, with all the other spiritual and physical side effects that go with being sexually active outside of marriage.
the use of artificial contraceptives such as the O-pill is directly contradictory to Catholic moral teaching because it separates the creation of new life from the marital act. Coming up, the pro-life legacy of Pope St. John Paul II, 20 years after his death. We look at his influential teachings on marriage and family and how their timeless wisdom on human dignity speaks to the modern world. Speaker and author Jason Evert discusses theology of the body next. Welcome back. April 2nd marks the 20th anniversary of the death of Pope St. John Paul II. The saint was a beacon for the pro-life movement, the dignity of the human person from conception to natural death, and the beauty of marriage and family. St. John Paul II was well known for his Theology of the Body, a collection of general audience reflections on marriage, human sexuality, and the human person made in the image of God. In his Theology of the Body, he expounded profoundly upon Pope St. Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, which reiterates the Church's unwavering teachings against contraception. He also defended life in his 1995 encyclical Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life, declaring, "Man's life comes from God. It is his gift, his image and imprint, a sharing in his breath of life. God, therefore, is the sole Lord of this life. Man cannot do with it as he wills." Joining me now is Jason Evert, speaker and author, co-founder of the Chastity Project, and host of the podcast Lust is Boring. Jason, thank you so much for joining us again. First, could you outline for us the central tenets of Theology of the Body? What was the main message that Pope St. John Paul II was trying to send to audiences?
Well, the basic idea is that we're made in the image and likeness of God, and God is love, so we're made in the image and likeness of love. And so things like lust aren't just things we shouldn't do. In the end, it's not really who we are. And so when God created us, he said, it's all very good, but then he said, but it's not good for man to be alone. And the reason for that is because if we're made in the image and likeness of God, and God is a communion of life-giving persons in this union of love, then we're made to make a gift of ourselves in love. And so his teaching is really not just like a litany of prohibitions, you know, do all these things, you're going to go to hell. It's more, this is how to express God's love in and through your body. So it is good news. It totally reframes the Church's teachings on human sexuality in a way that really leads in with beauty and then truth and goodness as well. Because you can argue with what's good and true, but to me, beauty is irrefutable.
Indeed. Now, Pope St. John Paul II discusses responsible parenthood in relation to the transmission of life. Can you explain what this means?
Well, I think a lot of times when people hear that phrase, responsible parenthood, they think about having fewer children, limiting children. But sometimes responsible parenthood means having more children, because the best gift you could give to a child ultimately is really a sibling. And so now the Church understands. The Church will never tell you exactly how many kids to have, but God will. And so the question is, do we trust him with our bodies? Do we trust him with our families? And if there is a serious reason to postpone pregnancy for a while, that you can always use what's called natural family planning or fertility awareness methods. There's no need to be at odds with our own body. And so instead of, you know, kind of conforming a woman's body to our desires with chemicals or hormones or barriers, what we should do is conform our desires to the perfect way her body has already been created. And this is authentic sexual liberation. I don't think it's any surprise that of the 50 or 60 or so young couples that John Paul II took into the wilderness to teach about love, responsibility, marriage, they had a grand total divorce rate of 0%. So whatever it was that he was teaching them, it obviously was working.
And some might argue that his Theology of the Body is more relevant today than it was back then. What message do you think Pope St. John Paul II would have for our times?
Well, one of the things that he wrote in his book, Love and Responsibility, is that the greater the feeling of responsibility you have for your beloved, the more real love there is. And so this is something I think we need to bring into every single relationship. And during this time in human history where it seems that we've lost sight of what it even means to be human, we can't even explain what a woman is. You know, John Paul teaches us through the Theology of the Body that our bodies are not meaningless. Our bodies are meaningful. It's stamped into our bodies. is not simply our identity as male or female, but our calling to discover ourselves through a total gift of self. And so whether it's a question of gender, premarital sex, or contraception, the theology of the body reframes all these things in a way that reveals the fact that we're all created good and to make a gift of ourselves. So if someone's not familiar with theology of body, I encourage you, find some books that can popularize it, familiarize it, because it's really, as George Weigel, his biographer, said, a theological time bomb to set to go off this millennium with drastic consequences for the whole world.
That's incredible. And speaking of this theme of givenness, I hear you're promoting a new publication of a meditation written by St. John Paul II on givenness. Can you talk to us about that and its importance for married couples today?
Yeah, in the year 1994, the year of the family, John Paul wrote this meditation on givenness, but for whatever reason, nobody really knows, never published it during his lifetime. In 2005, he passed away. 2006, it came out in Italian, not in English till 2011, but it was in an online journal called Communio on page 871, and so it just remained inaccessible to so many people. I discovered just recently and read this, and I'm like, I think this is one of the most beautiful things John Paul has ever written on human love. I need to buy a bunch of copies and give them out to the young people we take on our wilderness backpacking retreats. And I found you can't buy it. It's not in print. And I said, what's going on? So I reached out to the publisher and I said, hey, could we have the rights to print this and a license? And they said, we'll look into it. And they emailed me back and they said, sure, it's yours. And they gave us givenness. And so this meditation on givenness weaves together these central themes of St. John Paul II's pontificate, from dignity of womanhood to the gift of self to the theology of the body, in a beautiful way. And it's short. It's only, you know, 30 pages long or so in print. And so we just printed it. It just came from the printer this week. And it's really a beautiful reflection on human love, whether it's for married people, priests, singles. You're going to find a tremendous amount of beautiful insights from the heart of John Paul II and this relatively undiscovered work of his.
That's incredible. I can't wait to read it. And thank you so much, Jason, for making it available to others and for sharing your insights today.
Well, thank you for having me on. If people want the book, they can just go to chastity.com and it's right there.
Thank you. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to like and follow us on our social media channels. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.